You're listening to a Mash Those Buttons podcast, brought to you ad-free with the support of our patrons. Visit mashthosebuttons.com or stay tuned after the show for more details. Welcome to the Mash Those Buttons show, where we cover the latest in games, community, culture, and everything in between. Today, we're going to be talking about the Mixer Shutdown. We're going to be talking about the Marvel Avengers War Table event. We're going to be talking about Cyberpunk 2077 Night City Wire Episode 1. And we're also going to talk a little bit about pay-to-win games. This is episode number 17, and we are recording for the week of June 29th, 2020. I'd like to welcome any first-time listeners. My name is Jared, but you can call me Ja, and I am here with the Games Industry Public Defender and the Scourge of Ironforge, Nick Zelenkevich.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Yeah, I'd like to thank you guys for taking the time to listen. I'd also like to thank and welcome back any returning listeners and give a very special thanks to our supporters on Patreon. We hope you're enjoying your benefits like the Cutting Room Floor and the Mash Those Buttons show extended play, and also to our Twitch subscribers. And if you want to know when we go live, you can just follow us at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/mashthosebuttons to keep up with what's going on with the show and the network. And yeah, we'd love to have you join our Discord community as well at mash.gg/discord. So we're just going to get right into it. Let's talk about the Mixer shutdown.
On Monday, the 22nd of June, Microsoft announced plans to shutter their streaming service, Mixer. While big-name streamers like Ninja and Shroud were released from their multi-million dollar contracts and free of the service, most streamers and partners would be transferred over to Facebook Gaming. Many streamers were distraught over losing all their hard work spent building their Mixer community, and many planned to forego the Facebook partnership instead of just moving independently to Twitch. For those who choose to go to Facebook, the Mixer monetization program will transition into Facebook's Level Up program. Anyone with a balance of Mixer's Ember currency will be reimbursed in Xbox gift cards. July 22nd, 2020 will be the day the transition is finalized and Mixer redirects to Facebook.
Big news in the world of streaming this week. Mixer has shut down, which is surprising, but not surprising. You know, if you looked at those stats recently of the streaming growth and everybody's like doing very well, except Mixer was a 0.2%, I think that's the non-surprising part. I did think Microsoft was going to put a bit more into it, but I think they just pulled another smart move. Like, this is not going well for us, guys. Like, this is not our, let's focus our fight somewhere else. And yeah, they are shutting Mixer down. It was announced on June 22nd. I mean, some of the details, they're trying to, I guess you can say they sold Mixer to Facebook Gaming. Is that the correct term?
That's what it looks like. Facebook Gaming? Or I think they're partnering with Facebook because they still want their xCloud to go somewhere. So they want to work with Facebook Gaming to use their xCloud service.
Right. So, yeah. So that's the thing. Is that part of the deal? You know, like you get all the Mixer users and, you know, channels and things like that. Because I think Facebook made an integration where you can go fb.gg/Mixer, and I think every channel on Mixer, it has a channel for them on Facebook or something like that. Like, basically matches up. I think if you've moved or set up your Facebook channel or your Facebook Gaming channel, it'll show up on that page. So Facebook is trying to make it really easy for people to move over. So Mixer partners, when they transfer or transition, they will still have their partner status. If you are part of Mixer's monetizing program, you can take part in Facebook's, which is called Level Up. You can get, you know, I think stars is what Facebook uses as their microtransaction instead of embers, which are essentially bits, you know. So you can still use all of that stuff. If you are a Mixer viewer and you had an outstanding balance of like Ember bits or channel subscriptions or whatever, if you have money, or if you had a Mixer Pro subscription, I didn't even know they had that, to be honest with you. If you had that, then you'll be able to get a gift card, an Xbox credit card, a gift credit.
Well, that part's nice.
That's nice. I think mostly if you have an Xbox, though, like if you're somebody who, let's say, only is like a PC person and you don't buy anything from the Microsoft store, well.
Well, I did get one of those before, and I bought me a Halo Needler with it. You can buy physical items with that money as well. It's not just games and stuff.
That's cool.
But why from where though?
They gave me a credit for Microsoft Store and stuff, and the Xbox Store. And I thought I could only buy games. Went on there and found I could buy a Halo Needler for $10. I'm like, cool.
Oh, okay. Well, there's something to look forward to if you want a Halo Needler. It was a sad scene, man. On Monday, it was a sad scene. Like, people were like on their streams, like literally crying that this was happening. Like, we spent so much time, you know, building up the channels and, you know, all that stuff, and it's all for nothing. Now they have to go to another platform, you know. And I think, like, maybe if they said that they were being bought by Twitch or integrating with Twitch or something like that, or even YouTube, it would have been a little bit better. But Facebook? That ain't it.
No.
Like, nobody who, like people who watch streams, generally speaking, aren't doing so on Facebook. I know Facebook was doing better than Mixer, that's for sure, but Facebook has a massive built-in audience already.
Yeah. Also, like, the generation that usually likes streaming games don't like Facebook.
I understand the hesitation of and you know, about having, you know, I built up my community here and now we have to move, but it just I would have to think, like, if you really built up that community, and especially it's not like I know when we were talking before about like Ninja and whatnot, like leaving Twitch to go to Mixer, that when they left, like, oh, like the people stayed on Twitch. So it's like, oh, well, I don't go to Ninja's channel. Let me just find somebody else that's doing whatever I like, and I'm not really going to follow him. But in this case, I feel like both the fans and the content creators, like, none of them are getting what they want here insofar as, like, oh, like, you know, I don't see too many people like, oh, you're going back to Twitch. Like, well, I'm going along to Facebook. Like, I'm sure there's going to be some people that do that, but I feel like by and large, if you built a real community like that, you feel like you built, if you put in that work on Mixer, they will follow you. If you really have that community that you think you do, that you're worried about losing, all that effort that you put in, it's not like you're starting from scratch over on Twitch. And I'm just flat out assuming most of these people are just going to shut down whatever they have on Facebook and move back over to Twitch. But like, I don't know. I understand. They're like, oh, it's like I put all this work in and I have all this, you know, clout with Mixer, and this is what I have here, and now it's all gone. But like, I feel like you're going to go over there. I know there's one Warcraft streamer who was over on Mixer, and then they went right back over to Twitch, and they're well on their way to getting partner over on Twitch. Like, they've, and it helped too. They went to the Warcraft community and they were like, all, you know, like, hey man, this sucks. And they actually got more attention because they were making that jump over to Twitch, that, you know, they in a way this boosted them. So, and I'm not saying that that's going to work for everybody, but if you've built your community properly, and if you know the space that your, you know, your game, assuming you're like linked to a game, or, you know, whatever your content is, if you have that space well set out, you know, other content creators, you're, you know, in a way it's kind of like you're always saying, Jared, like, you need to diversify. And, you know, make sure you're not relying on any one platform. You know, this is, you know, then you should have that, you know, yes. Will it take you all to get back to where you were? Yes. Will you lose some people? Yes. But at the end of the day, Twitch is where everybody is. So if you're going over to Twitch, all you can do is make more followers. All you can do is get more people. You know, there was a cap on Mixer that, you know, which is why Microsoft shut it down. There was a cap on Mixer that does not exist on Twitch. And I feel like a year from now, you know, I think most people are going to be happy with where they are.
Go ahead, Cara.
Yeah, my main concern a lot is, like, the nice thing that having Mixer is, it was more competition for Twitch, because the bigger people, yeah, they don't care where they go. Wherever they go, their community will follow. They'll make good money. Mostly what's getting hurt is the smaller community, the smaller tribe people still trying to get started out. They literally just got people to follow Mixer. Now they've got to start back over from square one on Twitch. And Twitch does not make it very easy. I've tried starting stuff on Twitch, and no matter much, I have like 10 plus viewers every time. It still says I only have 2.5 average. I'm like, can I see where this math is coming from?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like you said, it's a lot of the smaller streamers are the ones being hurt the most. Like, if they pull half of the communities that they have, I'd be surprised. The smaller ones. You know, I think the partners will probably be okay. But, you know, building up a followership of even 500 people is a task. It's a task if they manage to bring those people over. Not to mention, for some reason, I guess Mixer had a bunch of people who had actually been banned from Twitch, too. So they were talking about that now. If those people, I can't say whether or not those people deserve to be able to go back to Twitch or not. I mean, if you're permanently banned from Twitch, you know, they don't just do it on the first try.
They banned a bunch more people today. So
yeah. So temporary bans or permanent bans?
Permanent bans. That's all related to the sexual harassment and assault stuff going on. So gotcha. they're purging some of that element of their community, and I can't imagine that. Those, you know, not to say that Mixer would have welcomed them, but I think it's at some point if Mixer still existed just 3 more days, they would have been called on the same way that Twitch was. Mixer got out at the exact right time to dodge that bullet.
That is true. And even though that there's obviously way more people on Twitch that could possibly view you, the fact that Twitch is so saturated makes it much harder to grow yourself on Twitch. A very popular Twitch streamer, he even says that, you know, a couple years back, yeah, sure, you can grow your following on Twitch just from Twitch. He says, but now, most of the time, he gets people from other platforms to come to his Twitch. That's how they find him. And, I mean, even us, right? We're not big Twitch streamers, you know, but most of the people that come to our Twitch are from our shows or are from our Discord. You know, they come from other places to the Twitch. So, yeah, like Twitch is just so saturated, it's going to be really tough for those people to rebuild their communities. But you know who really came out on top here?
Ninja
and Shroud. Both of them. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, the numbers came out and Ninja made $30 million off of this. I don't know how much Shroud made.
But their contracts that's beside what they made when they were brought over to Mixer from Microsoft.
Yeah. And so their contracts are void. They don't have to go to Facebook Gaming. They can go back to Twitch. So Ninja made $30 million, and now he can go back to Twitch if he wants to and continue to make money. You know, like, that's, I mean, that just shows you life is not fair.
Not at all, because it didn't really fairness, do much to get that money.
Fairness is not a factor in the universe. It's just not. So keep that in mind. As you're living your life, you're not owed anything because there is no balance, only chaos. Anyway, now, like Kura did mention earlier, that the deal does include Microsoft bringing xCloud to Facebook Gaming, which I think that's an even bigger thing for Microsoft. I mean, this really sucks in terms of Mixer, but like, it's just a smart move, man. Like, in terms of the Mixer community, it really sucks. But for Microsoft, it's just a smart move. You know, it's like, well, the technology that they're running Mixer on is worth more than the platform itself. You know, because that tech that they use to make Mixer, they're going to use that tech in Microsoft Teams now. Which is, I know a lot of business people know who that is. They're actually making a personal version of Microsoft Teams, which is going to replace Skype, by the way. A little birdie told me that. Not mentioning any names, that is going to replace Skype. And yeah, so like, the technology behind Mixer is worth more than Mixer itself. So something that Phil Spencer said, he said, you'll see us continue to grow this relationship. This will be the beginning of us seeing future opportunity together. I think we have a lot of alignment between the organizations on areas where the industry is going and how we can help each other. So yeah, Microsoft is really looking to get xCloud into Facebook so that people can see a game, click a button, and instantly start playing it. One thing that I do want to address is that there was I was watching a YouTube video I don't want to mention his name, but he's also a popular streamer, and he kept calling Phil Spencer the head of Mixer. Please get it right. Phil Spencer is the head of Xbox.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Put some respect on his name. You put some respect on his name. R-E-S-P-E-C-K. Put respect on his name. Head of Xbox. Thank you.
At this point, can I call myself the head of Mixer since nobody's the head of Mixer?
Oh, man. But yeah, I mean, this is, well, I want to say this is for the best, but for the Mixer community, I disagree. It's not for the best for them. It is what was for the best for Microsoft. I do think that Mixer was important, though, even though they weren't growing that much. Because here's the thing. Facebook and YouTube are just trying to keep up with streaming. They're not trying to push forward or take the spot. They know Twitch has the spot. They're just trying to keep up and not get left behind. So Mixer was at least trying new things. They had features only available to Twitch partners. Those features were available in Mixer, period. You know, so I think Mixer going away for the streaming community in general is not necessarily a good thing, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah. It feels like there's an opening there, though, that you need a rival to Twitch. And like you just said, Facebook and YouTube don't count. There needs to be a solid number two. And on the one hand, I feel like, well, if Mixer's going away, some enterprising person out there should be able to develop, to do a startup that's going to be here's the new streaming platform to rival Twitch. And it might take a few years to get caught up, but so be it. But then again, it's if Microsoft couldn't do that with all their money behind it.
Exactly. So,
but I wonder, did they really throw themselves at it? I'm sure the X Cloud and all the tech there is awesome and it's going to be great in Teams and whatnot. But I just feel like there's an opportunity that somebody out there is sitting, in their proverbial garage, okay, now's our chance. I got the domain purchased. Let's go live. Let's do it. And maybe hopefully, 5 years from now, we'll have a more competitive streaming environment. Because you're right that on the one hand, I feel like Twitch should do well enough, to bring everybody over. But on the other hand, it's the fish in the pond analogy. It's a lot easier to be a bigger fish because Mixer was a smaller pond. Whereas on Twitch, it's the ocean and you've got whales and krakens and whatnot. And there's no way you're competing with them. So,
well, there's also that. So it's a lot of the problem with a lot of these streaming platforms is the Mixer technology was great, but it's all about building communities and getting communities involved. That's what really was hurting them. They weren't really building the community because being at 2% is terrible. Everybody else being 200%, 100%. Yeah, you really can't be if you're not growing the community.
And then another thing, the only reason YouTube and Facebook grew the way they did was because they have built-in viewer bases already. Mm-hmm. They have built-in users. So Facebook grew because of all the billions of people, I would imagine, that use Facebook, and YouTube, the billions of people that watch YouTube.
They already have a community.
That's the thing. They already have those people. And then, it's easy to get those people to fall into a stream from time to time. That's the thing. Twitch has just dominated streaming for the longest time. And it's going to be extremely hard for somebody who does not have a built-in audience already to build a streaming platform. The only player left to try to fill that space, Twitter. And they ain't doing it. So that's the only player I can see that can really do that. But yeah, I mean, I am sorry for you, for the Mixer streamers that have lost their home, and hopefully you can, find success on Twitch still. So you guys got any closing thoughts?
I think the only other people I can think of maybe is those TikTok people. Maybe they'll have their own streaming platform.
No.
Oh, well, I tried.
No. All right, well, thanks, guys. All right, let's talk about the summer without E3. So we're having, lots of little events or virtual events. And two bigger ones this week were the event, Marvel's Avengers and the Cyberpunk. So let's start with the Marvel Avengers. I felt like you got more information out of the Avengers event than you got out of the Cyberpunk event. And to be perfectly honest with you, I actually don't want too much information. Like, after this episode, I am not going to be following the Night City Wire because I want all that stuff to be fresh to me when I get into the game, you know? So yeah, they've already convinced me. I didn't even have to watch this one. I only watched it because it was the first one. So I'm interested enough to buy it already. But yeah, so for the Avengers, Marvel's Avengers, they kind of showed, actually they delivered a good part of the plot. I guess they didn't talk about what happens throughout the game, but they kind of really set up the plot of the game. They basically, what happens is, you know, sometime, this is actually a brand new Avengers story. It has nothing to do with the games at all. The Avengers cause something called A-Day, in which they release a gas that creates the Inhumans. And it looks like it was a setup. That's based off of the cutscenes they showed. It looks like it was a setup. So after, you know, A-Day, a company was formed called AIM and was trying to cure Inhumans. The person who created that company, AIM, Dr. George Tarleton?
Tarleton,
okay. Yeah, he's also Inhuman, but it's kind of a front because, you know, they're basically just trying to scare the shit out of people about Inhumans, saying that they're too powerful and they're uncontrollable, but at the same time, they're using the Inhumans, they're harnessing their powers, and they're putting them into these robots, right?
That's correct.
So, Dr. Tarleton eventually becomes MODOK, which, and now I'll be honest, I am not super familiar with MODOK lore. So in the game, it definitely means mental organism designed only for killing. I don't know if that's actually what that means in the comics.
I think it is. So, the killing part's the important one.
yeah. So I'm not super strong on MODOK, to be perfectly honest with you. I'm well aware that he should be more than a handful for the Avengers. But in terms of what MODOK actually meant, that was my first time hearing it, to be honest with you. But, you know, they even showed, I think showed a little bit too much. Like, they showed a part where the Avengers are kind of turning on each other and stuff like that. It looks like Captain America is dead, something that Thor did. But that just can't be true because there's a model of him in game.
I get the feeling because you'll play through the events of A-Day. So you'll play, I'm guessing that's like the tutorial chapter one where you'll play through that. And so you get to play Captain America and you won't have the same freedom of choice of characters. Like, you'll play through each part of that. And then you get to the end and then Captain America dies. And then at that point you'll sort of, I don't know how branching the story is because you have these hero specific story missions that you get to go on. And so I guess as you unlock those, you know, you'll play as that given hero through that part of the story to wind up unlocking the full thing. They showed Thor's story mission, but the rest of the Avengers were all there, minus Captain America, obviously, you know, doing stuff alongside of him. So I'm sure some missions may very well be just the hero and a one on, you know, whatever the enemy is mission. And then this one in particular had the other heroes there as backup and he's communicating with them and whatnot. I guess it's going to have a story. It's not quite clear exactly how straightforward that story is. There was a big map where a bunch of little hot spots were that you could pick, like, this is a mission. So I guess you can kind of pick, you know, how you're going to proceed to get to the end.
Right. Yeah. And in the absence of Cap, it looks like Mrs. Marvel is your fourth. So that should be pretty cool. But I still think they're going
to
bring Cap back
sometime
in the game.
Well,
it's
supposed to be one of those like MMO type games where you can play, you know, like with your friends or whatever and, and run around with the world. So like, I have to imagine like you're going to have people running around as Captain America. He's a draw. people like him.
I thought it was more, from what I can see, it looked more like a live service like Destiny.
Yes.
That's what it looked like to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like you, instead of having like the tower, you have the heli ship, you know,
yeah.
From, you know, the movies. So you still do have that. And you have to rebuild it apparently. I mean, I think that's like the stuff they showed us. I'm pretty sure it's pretty early because the Thor mission that they showed was everybody fighting on top of that of the heli ship.
Yes.
So now I gotta be honest with you, like what the stuff they showed with Thor, I don't know. It felt a little bland, didn't it? Like it just kind of felt like. Like maybe it felt like they were playing a really vanilla character. Like they didn't have like it feels like they should have showed his play maybe a bit further into the game when he has his upgrades and maybe has some additional combos or something like that. Because later on in the video they showed one of his skills, which is he has an ability to lock on to multiple enemies and throw his hammer and hit both of them. He didn't even do that in the story mission that they showed.
That's true. He did not.
You know, so it really felt like you were just really vanilla. I mean, one thing I did notice is how the melee attacks work. It looks like some of the enemies have unblockables or moves that if you get like a perfect block or a perfect dodge or something like that, it'll give you an advantage. That was like the red ring and the yellow ring. It reminds me of God of War whenever I see something like that. And I mean, plenty of other games have it too. That's just the first game that comes to mind for me. His ultimate, the Bifrost, I thought was pretty cool.
Yes.
Where he can use the Bifrost to get past stuff, but then it comes down on like a beam and it'll destroy stuff or damage stuff around it. So, yeah, I mean, when I was watching that part, I was like, I don't know, this looks a little meh. But then the parts they showed after that where they started talking about the hero the skill trees and how you can upgrade moves and the three different types of hero moves, like the assault moves or the ultimates or the support moves where you can buff yourself and you can buff your allies. You know, when they were showing those parts, the fighting looked way more fun, you know. And then when they started showing like the war zones, which those look like they're just like multi-part missions where you have to do one something over here, then go over here and do something and fight a boss and unlock this and do this and do that. Those look like really involved and they look big, right? Where you're so like you're even, I will admit, even when they were fighting on top of the heliship, the area was big and it looked like your team can kind of spread out.
Yes.
And fight and stuff like that. So yeah, it looked pretty cool. Go ahead.
Well, no, it looked like, you know, it's not like a typical thing where it's like, okay, there's four of us. We're all going to stick together. And I mean, I guess you could do that and just roll as a group, but you could also, you know, spread out, you know, you go over here. I'm going to go over there kind of thing. And, you know, if there's a particularly hard mini boss, like, you know, somebody can come over and help me. But yeah, it didn't look like your standard. Everybody stick together and, you know, roll as a unit.
Right. Exactly. And of course, there are like cosmetics. Like, so this, I think it's two types of cosmetics. There's like gear that will give you perks and stuff like that. But there's also just regular cosmetics. And there's also iconic cosmetics where, like, you know, some from, you know, outfits from super popular comic books or stages of the Marvel Universe. You'll be able to get those through iconic missions or buy them through the store. One thing that made me like cringe a little when they said this is that. And you would think this would be a good thing, right? But they said that the game will add new regions, new heroes, and new stories at no cost. Bad move. Please see Overwatch.
Well, yeah, but it depends how they implement the store, because they can give you the new, you know, give you a new zone, give you a new hero, and then whatever zones are going to be tied to that hero. But then, you know, however many costumes they have thrown into the store, you know, it's like, yeah, you get the hero for whatever. But if you want that, you know, he's got a lame costume. If you want the super awesome costume, you got to pay for it. And, you know, some of these heroes have multiple super awesome costumes. So I don't know.
We'll see. The only time I've seen this kind of work is when you have like a season pass, you know, and they didn't say anything about a season pass. But Overwatch said, we're going to add new heroes, we're going to add new maps. At no cost, because they expected the money from the microtransactions to keep the game afloat, but that goes away. It does.
Yeah.
Well, the game is going to be popular. It's going to be popular when it comes out. It's going to whittle down to the most hardcore. They're going to buy up all the shit, and then why would other people have a reason to come back and buy stuff if they're not going to play it?
Because they'll announce Avengers 2.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. So I think they should roll that back. But like, no, like I fully expect it. So once I saw, well, one, the game is just called Marvel's Avengers. It's not called like Avengers and then I have subtitle, right? So they can throw as many stories in this thing as they want to. I fully expected them to have like, you know, DLC later and like, you know, 6 months from now, a year from now, here's a bunch of new missions. Here's a bunch of new heroes. Have at it. I think that's perfectly fine.
This game sounds a lot like Marvel Heroes, rest in peace, which, you know, it was basically the same thing. You know, you know, quasi-MMO is more of a Diablo-esque kind of game. But, you know, you played in the same world as people, so you went out and you saw, you know, if you were playing as, like, Captain America, you could go out and you could see, like, five other Captain Americas running around doing stuff. But, yeah, their main game was free. Their main way of getting money was through the costume shop, and you could buy you couldn't just buy costumes. They had some other little augments and stuff and perks for your character you could buy there. But the game went through several overhauls in its time, and then was it like 2 years ago now? I can't even think of how long it's been. They finally shut it down. I kind of feel part of it was that the studio is struggling, which I wonder how much it would have been struggling if they had a proper monetization scheme implemented. But also they kind of got the license pulled out from under them. And I wonder if it was because they're like, oh, hey, we're going to do this Avengers game, which is basically going to be the same thing. But, you know, it's going to look all nice and pretty and whatnot. I mean, I remember when they announced Marvel Heroes and they were like, oh, we've got who is it? Straczynski. They got Straczynski to write the story, and they're like, oh, it's like it's gonna be like animated comic book panels in between your chapters where you're playing through and all this stuff. And yeah, it was really cool. And I'm watching this and I'm like, this feels like just like an upgraded version of that with less heroes at the moment. But you know, I think they'll have enough time to sort of, you know, test out the marketing waters, see how it goes. They'll realize that they're not getting enough money from the microtransactions, and hopefully, I think the season pass seems to be the way to go, is what you're saying. That's what everybody's jumping on here. It's not loot boxes. So,
and it's like the season passes are cheap enough. You feel like you're getting pretty decent rewards from it. You know, fuck it. Just do a season pass. I think that's the happy medium gamers and publishers have met at is season passes, to be honest with you. You know, because I guess I'll foreshadow next week a little bit. Games have to be paid for, you know what I'm saying? And the cost of development has been going up. And every time there's a console, I would say every time there's like a generational leap in terms of like graphics technology and things like that, the cost goes up. And I think eventually maybe it starts to come, I don't even say it comes down a little bit, because yeah, so, you know, developers, they learn how to work with the various tools, but then they're also building bigger worlds. So the cost of development goes up, but yet the price of the games don't, you know? So to deliver a $60 game and then continue development on it for new stuff and your microtransactions, I just don't see microtransactions really keeping this game afloat. You know, I think a season pass would be a good idea just to make sure and get what you need.
Thanks for showing up, Sean Layden.
Yeah. but let's talk a little bit about the Night City. Well, like I said, they didn't deliver a ton of information, but they did show off the prologue a little bit. If you're a member of the games media, you were lucky enough to, I guess, get a preview of it. I guess the first 4 hours of the game or so, which is, I'm assuming, is the prologue, because that's all they showed in Night City Wire. You know, so they showed like they didn't even show the prologue, right? They showed pieces of the prologue, which we kind of already knew what happened, but I think they gave a bit of a backstory to additionally what happened, like in the prologue. So I think the prologue is pre Keanu Reeves, and after that's post Keanu Reeves. So I think that's going to be our timeline until the game comes out.
That should be every timeline, just recenter.
Yeah. I felt like the trailer they showed felt very GTA-esque, didn't it?
Yes.
Like, it was a lot going on, a lot of talking, just moving around, strippers, you know, shit like that. So, yeah, like, it felt very GTA-esque.
Well, it's GTA, but you know whether or not you're circumcised.
Yeah, like, it's, you know, I don't know, man. I'm just getting a feeling this game's gonna be like really deep, right? I mean, Cyberpunk is not like a new IP. Cyberpunk is based off of a tabletop RPG, right? You know, so there's already a deep world and deep lore behind it. I think is it Cyberpunk? Is it 2020 or 2022 or 20?
That I don't know.
I'm not sure. Like this is a, I think
whatever
this
is a totally different we should year. Be here by now.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think it's gonna be a really huge game. You know, maybe Square Enix shouldn't show Deus Ex because this might just embarrass the pants off of what they've done with Deus Ex, even though Deus Ex is great. But they did mention that there's gonna be 6 playable areas and then a 7th area called the Badlands, which takes place outside of the city. I'm like, did somebody tell the guys at Rage about this? Because that's what it looked like. It looked like Rage 2, to be perfectly honest with you. So, you know, from articles around the internet and stuff like that, from people who've played, they're saying that, you know, there's a street cred system, which that's how you're going to be able to pick up new quests and harder quests and things of that nature. And also maybe get discounts at vendors. Yeah, there's going to be factions that you're going to have reputation with these factions. So, you know, I'm assuming there's going to be some moral choices you got to make. Like, do I rob these people who have good faction with, you know, or do I kind of let it go? There's going to be these things called Ripper Docks, I think they said. That's basically how you're going to get your upgrades, but there's going to be different types of Ripper Docks, you know? They also announced a Netflix anime coming in 2022, Cyberpunk Edgerunners, it's called. So that should be pretty cool. One thing they kind of just showed in depth was this thing called Brain Dance, which is, it lets you go through the memories of other people. And from what they said, its major function is kind of to inform you about the people of Cyberpunk. I'm sure there's going to be some actual mission application to it.
Right.
But while you're in a brain dance, you can actually control the camera around the person or around the area. You can find other things that the person may not have noticed. Like, you know, you can focus on various sounds or various things in the environment. Like the one they showed was a guy robbing a store and then he gets shot at the end of it. Turns out the guy shot him was his partner, you know? So yeah, it looked pretty cool. I gotta admit though, don't really like V's voice. Don't like the voice. Well, I think you can change that maybe. Yes, I heard you can change a lot of stuff.
There's two voices. The customization on like your body is insane, what they allow for there. So yeah, it sounds like, especially, you know, saying that it came from a tabletop RPG, it sounds like it's very standard RPG fare in the sense that, you know, your character is almost infinitely customizable. You know, you have the reputations and the factions and whatnot. I mean, all of that is standard RPG fare. We've all played tons of games that have that before. So it really, I think, comes down to how well CD Projekt Red implements this, which I would say I don't think there's any reason to be concerned. It seems like this is something they should be able to execute properly on. And so far, I don't think there's anything that we've seen that would raise a red flag at this point to, you know, worry about, other than the, you know, the fact that it's not coming out in April.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I would just expect it, I don't expect it to be bug free by any chance. I just expect that it's going to be a good game, a pretty deep game, a long game, I would imagine. So I'm looking forward to it.
Going back to the series that comes out in 2022, does that suggest anything that we can expect for DLC from the game? If this game's coming out in September, or no, I know November, then does that mean that we can expect like maybe some kind of DLC mid-year next year, maybe a year from now, you know, like September or something, and then that would lead into the web series, or is that going to be something completely standalone?
I think it's completely standalone. I think it's completely standalone. They already said like it's a completely different story, same universe, different story. It doesn't have anything to do with the game. So I think they're gonna let what happened with The Witcher happen again, where The Witcher series came out. The Witcher like sold like crazy during that time. 2 years from now, Cyberpunk anime is coming out. Maybe, you know, they'll get like a boost in Cyberpunk sales again. So it should be interesting. Like I said, that Night City Wire didn't give us too much info. They're kind of trickling info. And I think they're going to have the second episode in a few weeks. So depending on what they show, we might say something, but I doubt it. All right. So that is enough for the quick news. Well, or we say quick news. I think we've been talking for like close to 30 minutes on it. So yeah, let's actually head into our final feature for the night about pay to win games.
Good evening, everybody. Kerbar here with a new segment for Mash Those Buttons. Joined tonight with Bobby Schisler and Kurt Smith. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good.
I'm doing just grand, you know, living the dream on my third podcast of the night. So it's, you know, I've been sitting in front of my computer for a bit.
Yep. Nice. Very nice. I used to do that too, Ed. Starts to wear on you after a little bit.
That's why I have gray hair.
Gray hair? You mean your beard. I was going to say, there's nothing on top of your head. Tonight, I bring these two on to talk about mobile gaming and specifically pay-to-win gaming. Do you want to take it away, Ed, and tell us what exactly you want to talk about?
Sure. There's a couple topics I want to talk about with this. And I guess first and foremost is, what makes a mobile game pay to win? Because there are different ways about it. So there's games like Hearthstone that are play to win and not so much pay to win. Because they're more RNG based type of games, where like, yeah, you can get a slight advantage by getting cards, but you're going to get those cards over time anyway, but you don't need all the cards. But then there's other that are pay to win games, like, you know, Clash of Clans, Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes, Marvel Strike Force, those kind of games. So, Bobby, in your mind, what makes a game pay to win?
Well, I would say Hearthstone, at least for the majority of its life, was one of the better ones. Like, yes, you had to buy cards, but you could buy $60 worth of cards every expansion. The expansions came out every 3 months, and those were like $60 would get you almost all the cards that you needed. And the way that they did their, you know, retiring cards, you could disenchant those, or I forget what they called it on Hearthstone, but you could then make the cards that you needed. So it wasn't so crazy. Like, you could make what you needed for certain decks that were popular then. And so, yes, it was $60 every three months, but it's like buying another game. Like, it was one of the most fairest, you know, mobile games that I ever played. And I played it a long time. I only stopped playing Hearthstone probably like a year ago, and I played it from launch.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Like, when you have a game that is, you pay up front just like you would any other game, but you're not paying anything more on top of that afterwards to get a competitive advantage. Because once you get all the cards in that set, there's nothing else to do. You pay the $60-$70 or whatever, and then you get all those cards, and then you don't need to get any more cards till the next expansion comes out. That's not really a pay to win. Now, Clash of Clans or Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes is, you're paying for gear, you're paying for lack of better terms, like crystals or currencies and stuff to give yourself an advantage over the normal person.
Well, in Clash of Clans, it's literally, you could pay for anything. I mean, you could pay to just instantly finish your buildings. And then you can, you know, not have to worry about jumping on the next day because you just instantly finish. Or you could boost, like the way Clash of Clans works is you have to build an army. You know, if you're a full-size town, it takes like an hour or two to build an entire army. But what you could do is you could pay, you know, I forget the numbers, but you could pay like $5 per barracks to build up build up units 10 times faster. So if you have a 2-hour block that you could play, boosting works really good because you get to do like 5 attacks instead of your normal one. And that's one thing a lot of them do. And Clash of Clans is probably the most successful one.
Yeah, I think it kind of falls into the two categories of the collection games that where you have to collect things, and the building games, kind of like Clash of Clans. Kerr, you wanted to hop in?
Question for you, though. How does any of that paying to win and stuff affect the skill level for those games? Like in Hearthstone, you don't always have to pay for cards. If you're good enough, you can sometimes get around some of the meta by being creative with your supply.
Kind of. It depends. Like, it depends on what the current meta is. Like, Hearthstone, you definitely have to have cards if you want to be at the top. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to have all of the cards. There's normally many different viable decks, and you can make the one that you have the most cards of, and maybe you have to create one or two cards, but it's actually very forgiving for a mobile game.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, for us, as you talk about skill level, in like I was big in Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes and Marvel Strike Force and Disney Sorcerer's Arena, all kind of the same game, collection games. Bob, big in Clash Clans. And those are some of the probably the two biggest ones out there, is Clash Clans and Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes. Are probably the two biggest. And what happens with those is there's no skill gap really a lot of the times, because what you're paying for is just to complete things faster than everyone else. So your characters or your buildings or your armies or anything like that are just a higher power level than everyone else that isn't spending money. For a perfect example, there was a new hero that came out in this game, Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes. Galactic Legend Kylo Ren, one of the most powerful characters in the game. If you were a new player, it will take you a year to get him, unless you spend money. And you could get him in 2 weeks. So, like, you could spend the money, get him in 2 weeks, but to do that, you're probably spending $3,000 to $5,000, and plenty of people do it. And that's why they still do it.
How much did you just say?
$3,000 to $5,000.
Ouch. That's a good part of it, right?
That is the thing with, like, these, everyone's like, and Bob, you can attest to this with Clash of Clans, is, you know, it is not, most of these games are not very new person friendly, because they have so many people shelling out thousands upon thousands of dollars.
Well, and those are your, like, for mobile games, you have whales, right? And in Clash of Clans, I was a baby whale, but I was definitely a whale. Like, lots of people could get along without spending much money at all, but it depends on your personality type. And these mobile games really take advantage of those addictive personality types that want to complete everything quickly and want to get everything fast. And you just see that, and you're like, oh, I could do $10, but then you do $10 7 days in a row, that's $70. Like, maybe you do $10 three times, you know, on the weekend, because you want to just get, you know, some more time to play. And it's just, if some people, like, I had a friend who played Clash of Clans with me, and he never spent a dime. He wasn't as powerful as me, but he had just as much fun because he had a different personality.
Mm-hmm. Like for me, I play Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes, and I spent $4 on the game. I bought the starter pack. That means nothing. I'm not any form. I'm a free-to-play player. And I've been playing it basically every day for 4 years, 5 years. I mean, I used to do a podcast about it. And I am middle of the road power level, playing for 4 or 5 years. Like, I know people who have spent $75,000 on that game. And that is not even, like, there's whales and then there's krakens. Like, krakens. So there's one big person I want to talk about in mobile games like this is Mobile Gamer. He's a YouTuber and he's pretty popular. I met up with him at BlizzCon this year. Or I'll talk to him. We tried to meet up. But he is someone who has done shows with people, like a round table with people who have spent $150,000 each on the game. And those are the kind of people that drive these games. People wonder where these games come from. It's because of people like that. You get three people, they spend $900,000 on a game. Like, so three people almost spend $1 million on the game.
That's a lot.
That's
like, that's insane. But like, you're like, oh, people don't do. No, people do spend that. That's why they're, the pay to win games are so popular.
So Kura, what mobile games have you been super into?
Most of the stuff I've been into has been like Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes and Hearthstone. Mm-hmm. But I know that I could easily get addicted to things, so I make sure just to buy. I don't really buy anything Galaxy of Heroes, and like I just like Star Wars characters, but not enough to be competitive. And Hearthstone, I'm like, okay, I know I just need to spend like $60. I'll be good to go. All the other ones like Clash of Clans, I tried for a bit. But then all the time stinks, and then saying like, hey, pay to do this faster. Pay to get this done more. I'm like, no, This is not fun. I'm not going to do this.
So I wonder, like, are you super competitive on most games that you play? Or are you just like, I just want to play. I'm not really super competitive.
I'm very competitive on everything I try to do. If I'm into a game, I'm trying to figure out the best way to min-max my stuff.
Well, see, but with pay-to-win games, the best way to min-max is to pay. And that's what trapped me into Clash of Clans. Like, I was, like, our clan was one of the top clans in the world. And I even had two accounts. I had one account that was normal, and then one account that was basically cheating the system. You would have all your normal buildings, but you would have no walls and no defenses. So you would have these worked up armies where you had the best offensive power, but had no defense. But then when you would go into an actual clan versus clan war, you would be like, number, like, there'd be 50 people in the war, you'd be number 45, but you'd be able to take out number 3 on their team. And I mean, that was how competitive I was with this game.
And that's why I stay away from those games, because I know my competitive spirit, and I'm like, I want to be the best. I'm going to spend all this money. Like, I used to play Yu-Gi-Oh back in the day, and unlike Hearthstone, that game, I knew you'd spill like certain cards cost like $400 or $500. I started looking into my finances. I'm like, I just spent almost $10,000, and that's basically my entire year's paycheck just to be competitive in this game. And I had to stop.
Yeah, same with like Magic the Gathering too.
Magic the Gathering is brutal. I will say this is you're starting to see this trend, not even for pay to win, but your Apexes, your Fortnite, you're starting to see more people go towards these free games where you just buy stuff. Because people in their minds think they're getting a deal. But then over time, they're spending more on the game buying cosmetics or stuff like that. It was just the natural transition from pay to win to pay to dress nice.
Yeah, I mean, pay to dress nice, I'm totally cool with. Because you just, if you're really into it, then you buy it. It was like Overwatch, when I first started, the first year of Overwatch, I bought tons of loot boxes. But then every year after that, I mean, I think on one of my accounts, I have like 300 loot boxes that aren't even opened because I just don't care at that point because I have five accounts and I don't even know what skins are on what account and everything else. So I just don't care about it at that point.
Yeah. Buy
it.
Yeah. I'll say for those, I don't mind because no matter how many times if I don't buy a loot box for Overwatch or don't buy a pack for Apex, when I get back in the game, I just have to relearn what guns are good. I don't have to pay to catch up so that I can get into a win. It's not like if I don't pay this money, I'm just going to be getting out of the 20th or 19th team every time.
Mm-hmm.
It's more if I just don't have the fancy suit on. Yeah. I can live with that.
Yeah. Now, I'll just, because we're getting to the end of our time, I will just kind of end with this on my part, is these are games are not going anywhere, but I doubt we will see that many new ones, because most of these games are very much not user-friendly, they're not new person-friendly. Like, they're not someone that you can log in and, like, if you log into Clash of Clans right now or Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes as a fresh account, you would have to spend an ungodly amount of money to get up to where you're competitive.
And it would be absurd.
You're not getting any new people. So you could probably get some new ones here or there, but I think you're starting to see those kind of dwindle.
But what they do keep a lot of the time is the whales and not even just the whales, but the people that have spent a few hundred dollars. They're like, well, I'm going to keep playing this game because I already have this investment in it. And so I'm going to keep going. And like Clash of Clans was smart. They like slowed down their progression so that they'd keep the like semi whales and, you know, the people that had been playing since the start.
Yeah.
That old sunk cost fallacy cropping in to keep those people in.
Yeah. The other X factor is China, who is just a massive, massive mobile game community. Like way more than the US or, you know, Western culture. Is China and mobile gaming. So, and that's something we don't know how much they are, but these games aren't going anywhere. Just don't get sucked in.
Yeah.
It's never going to end well for you because eventually the game's going to end and then you realize you're out $50,000.
Yeah, it's actually kind of weird when you bring up China because there's been certain other games have come to China recently, like Phantasy Star Online 2 came there and compared to the Japanese version, that one was just pay for cosmetics. Wherein, actually, when it came to China, the model completely changed and it became a pay to win game. Instead of cosmetics, you're paying to do things faster, get more stuff on there. It was just, if you wanted to be good at that game, you had to pay money. Mm-hmm. Whereas over here and in Japan, you just pay for cosmetics. If you want to play, don't pay a dime, you can still be competitive and have fun with the game.
Mm-hmm.
And just a precaution to anybody who is getting into mobile gaming and doing it slow. I would played Clash of Clans and I had just a ball with it. I mean, I loved it. But I was paying like $10 at a time, $20 at a time. I was you know, boosting my bases. I'd pay like maybe like something was gonna finish building while I was asleep, and I didn't want to lose the time to when I'd wake up in the morning to start the next build, because you only get like a certain amount of builders to work on stuff. I would just pay to end it so I could start something else, so I wouldn't have to worry about it in the morning. And my wife was like, "You spend so much on this game." I was like, "No, I don't spend much at all. It's just like little bits here and there." She went over our finances for a year, and I had spent $3,000 in 1 year on Clash of Clans. And this was at a time that $3,000 was a lot of money for us. And it was just, it was an eye opener. And I just quit then. Like, as soon as I found that out, I just quit. And I just told myself, all right, you're not playing mobile. And the only mobile game I played after that was Hearthstone. Do you guys have any precautionary tales?
I mean, not me personally, but like, I know people who have spent thousands upon thousands of dollars on the game. And then what will happen is, you know, something will happen and your account gets banned. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, yeah, that
would
be...
That's just brutal.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, all right, perfect example. This happened recently in the Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes community. A Kraken or a whale had spent thousands, tens of thousands of dollars on the game. And he quit the game. And he just gave his account to one of the popular people to test stuff out on. Well, that violated terms of services, so they banned him.
What? Really?
Yep.
Just for using the account, even though it's like the person already paid thousands of dollars.
Yeah, and he flat out gave him the account. Stopped playing. Just a different person. And they banned him.
It wasn't even cheating or anything. It was just because someone else was using it.
And the thing was, is they had he was a game changer, what they called him. They had like content creators who had like test accounts to test out all this stuff, to show videos and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They got, the reason he did this is because they got mad at the content creators and took away all their access. So that should probably do it for this. Like, it's a very, it's one of those subjects we could go on for a few hours on. It's just that it's one of those things that you don't hear a lot talked about it, and it's very prevalent in the gaming world. And, you know, it's both a problem and a blessing for a lot of these game companies. Like, there's a reason that they keep coming out with these pay-to-win games, because if you hit it, you basically can throw 5-10 people on the staff and just reap the rewards by just plugging out some new content every few months.
What we want to push across is that you, the gamer, are the reason that this gets to happen. And there's great developers that could be doing other great stuff. Stop giving them money for this.
Agreed. It's like, if you don't want them to do this, vote with your wallets. Don't give them money.
Mm-hmm. So, be smart, people. Be smart. Spend your money on Mash Those Buttons Patreon instead.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, I think that'll do it for us tonight. You guys got any other final thoughts before we take us over back to the main show?
No, that should be it.
Nope, just having flashbacks of, I'm getting, you know, I'm sweating a little bit thinking about all the like what I could have, like the gaming PC I could have right now with just that 1 year of Clash of Clans. We didn't look at the other years either. So,
and don't
hope. Yeah, I'm hoping that was the big year.
Yeah.
Yeah, you hopefully look back, you're like, oh, that was a small year. Crap.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about it.
So,
anyways, before we bring up any more unpleasant memories for Bob's, I'd like to thank you all for coming out tonight, and we'll head back over to the main show.
All right, that's going to be it for us tonight. Thank you guys for listening. Coming up this week on Mash Those Buttons, actually, the next few weeks are going to be actually really full. We got a new We Are Survivors available on Monday, a new SitRep Happy Hour available on Monday, Push the Point available on Tuesday. That's our Overwatch League podcast. Actually, I should probably tell you, We Are Survivors is our limited series on The Last of Us, and SitRep Happy Hour is kind of like a variety show. I know this episode, they talked about Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. They even had a quiz at the end of it, which is actually pretty funny. There's going to be a new Double Tap, which is our fighting game podcast, a new Torn and the Goblin, which is our Warcraft story and lore podcast. You can find Nick on there. We have a new Wondrous Tales, which is our Final Fantasy 14 podcast and a new Dropping Spicy, which is our Apex Legends podcast. Eight shows, if you include this one. All published by me. Go me. It's going to be a busy week, folks. But like I said, thank you for listening. You can find us on twitter.com/TheMashNetwork. Nick, why don't you tell them where they can find you?
I am at WookieBH on Twitter. You can also find me here on the Mash Those Buttons Network on The Torn and the Goblin, as mentioned. This week, we have Spaz Wesson on as a guest. You also find me on WoW Talk. That'll be next week. And I think that's what I do, those three things. Yes.
Okay. And you can find me on Twitter at Josh Tradamus. You can also find me on our Twitch channel at twitch.tv/MashThoseButtons. We tried streaming Friday night. I don't know. We had some weird problems with Twitch, so we weren't able to stream our cage drop, but we usually stream GTFO every Friday night. And we also stream our Apex Legends podcast, Dropping Spicy, on Tuesday. They do a little Apex play before that, though. I'd love to have you join our Discord community, like I mentioned earlier, which is mash.gg/Discord. Join the community, meet me and Nick. And we encourage you guys to stay tuned to actually reach out with your comments and questions. So you can do that on the Discord, or you can reach out via Twitter, or you can actually send us an email at contact@mash.gg. If you enjoy the show and you want to help us out, the best way to do that is to share the show with others and to rate and review on your favorite podcast platform of choice. And if you want to take your support a bit further, you can become a supporter on Patreon at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, where you can help support Mash Those Buttons with tiers starting at $1 a month. And you can gain early access to content as well as exclusive content. And we also have a Teespring store, which is teespring.com/store/mashthosebuttons. And like I said earlier, we have a Twitch channel. So if you have any Twitch subs, like a Prime sub, and you want to drop that on us, feel free. That's a great way to support as well. So thank you very much. And I encourage you guys to stay tuned after the show to hear more about Mash Those Buttons. And with that, we are done. Thank you very much. Catch you guys next week.
Stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to a Mash Those Buttons production. If you enjoyed the show, you should check out mashthosebuttons.com and see if any of our other shows might interest you. All of our shows are available on your podcast platform of choice like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content, you can help support Mash Those Buttons by becoming a patron at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, where you can receive Patreon bonuses for as little as $1 a month. You can connect with Mash Those Buttons at twitter.com/TheMashNetwork, facebook.com/MashThoseButtons, or join our Discord at mash.gg/Discord.